Recording live from the Lucky Number 7 Lounge in the basement of Dine Drink Travel World Headquarters in the barren wastelands of Far West Texas, this is Dine Drink Vegas, the podcast by and for everybody stuck at home who would rather be in the land of neon lights and bad decisions. I'm your host, John, also known as the Baller on a Budget, and welcome to episode 25, finally Fountain Blue. In this episode, we're going to give you Bill's review of the Fountain Blue Las Vegas. We're going to update you on some Vegas news stories we thought were interesting, and we're going to get to our drink of the day. But before we can do any of that, it's time to welcome the founder of Dine Drink Travel, the king of comps, the leader in the luxury lounge, the high roller of the high plains, the man who just got to take a limo to a luxury resort and wants to tell us all about it. That's right. Let's say hi to Bill, everybody. Hey, Bill.
Hey, John. I am thirsty. What are we drinking?
So we are drinking tonight because the Fountain Blue started in Miami, Florida. We are drinking a cocktail called the Miami Cocktail. Now, I always like to tell our listeners where cocktails came from. I could not find a recipe for this cocktail anywhere but the Contro webpage, and I could not find any place talking about a history. So I have a sneaking suspicion this is a cocktail that either the Contro company created or they ran some kind of bartender contest and they got it. But basically, this is a variation on a daiquiri. And what you have to make one of these is a 1 ounce Contro, or Contro, I never can't say it right, which is just really fancy pants triple sec. 1.5 ounces of light rum and 3/4 ounce of freshly squeezed lime juice, shaken like it owes you money, strained and served up in a cocktail glass. Bill, what do you think?
So I like it. It's a little bit tart for me. And I think if I was to do this again, I would cut the amount of the lemon juice in it, right? Like, it's a good drink and I love the orange taste. But to me, the lemon is almost swamping out the orange.
Yeah, and I should say, I said lemon juice. We actually did this with limes.
Okay, whatever the tartness is,
the run sheet says lemon, and I forgot that, and I made ours with limes, and you had lemons. So we essentially made a rumarita here. So, oops, I just realized we did that. Although, I don't know that lemon instead of lime would change that.
No, I don't think that would impact what I'm tasting, because the base thing is here, there's a very tart citrus, which is overpowering the Contro. So I like it. I think I would like it better with about half the amount of the fresh citrus.
And I'm going to disagree with you. To me, this really has that daiquiri. And you've heard me say this to bartenders. I would like a daiquiri. And when I say I want a daiquiri, I do not want a frozen or overly sweet woo girl college sorority on spring break drink. I want a daiquiri. And to me, this is it. It's bracing. It is tart. It's not very sweet. I think I could skip the Contro and enjoy this just fine, although it would be even tartar then. So having the triple sec in here does sweeten it up a bit, adds a little orange. But to me, this is what I like in a daiquiri.
Yeah, but like, you'll drink like a whole jar of bitters if they'll let you. So you like stronger tartar flavors than I tend to like.
And that is true. And I do wonder, knowing your preferences, if we left the lemon juice or lime juice alone, but we let you play with an aged rum, and instead of a triple sec, because Contro is just fancy triple sec, but instead of a triple sec, which is neutral grain spirit, orange, and sweet, if you did this with an orange brandy, Grand Marnier, Grand Gala, I think if you had the brandy notes and the aged rum notes, I wonder if that might round out the citrus a little bit and be more to your preference.
So I may go back to the liquor store right here by my house. And we're recording this on a Saturday night, so I can't do this till Monday. But what I may do is go get some Contro and try that with some nice Flor de Caña, because I'm betting that would change the flavor of this a great deal.
Yeah, I think so. And I think given the drinks you gravitate towards, at that point, it would be the rum equivalent of a whiskey sour, where you really do get the aged spirit, to play against the tart citrus. So as it is, I really do like this. If you are a fan, now the Hemingway daiquiri is another drink, but sometimes I'll tell bartenders I want a daiquiri that Hemingway would have recognized as a daiquiri. I think this is that. If you did it with cassasha and you just left the citrus in there, you'd be dangerously close to a caipirinha. I think this scratches the itch for me.
No, I had a couple of daiquiris in Havana back in 2018 when that was still a place you could go. And this very much reminds me of that drink. So, yeah, that's a fair comparison.
So, yeah, we did this in honor of Fountain Blue's roots in Miami. So that leads us to our main topic of the day. So you and I both had trips in Vegas. We're going to be touching on different aspects of our recent trips over the next few episodes. But we're going to open up with the Fountain Blue because if you've been listening to this podcast, and by the way, we thank all 17 of you for doing so.
We're up over 50 now.
Hey, we're kicking butt. If you've been listening for a while, then you know we've talked about many of the, you know, we were excited about it. Then all the controversies hit and you finally got to stay there. So we're going to focus on your experiences with the Fountain Blue. So I'm going to guide you through some questions and then get your take on it. So let's start with the initial experience. So when you arrived, now this was your second night. So you weren't in the limo at this point because you weren't coming from the airport. So
no, I was coming from the El Cortez.
Right. But you didn't stay at El Cortez. El Cortez by way of the Flamingo. And we're going to get to your stay at the Flamingo in a future episode. So when you got out of the Lyft, Uber, taxi, I'm assuming Lyft or Uber.
It must have been Uber. That's the app I got on my phone.
When you walked into the place, I want to get your general impression of the space when you first walked in and the check-in experience and that kind of thing.
So the first impression is that the space is just gorgeous. Now, partially that's helped by the fact that it's not as busy as a lot of Vegas hotels. And I'm not talking about the fact that it was a Wednesday at whatever, 1 in the afternoon, whenever it was I checked in. I'm not talking about busy there. I'm talking about it seemed more spacious and spread out. So the Bellagio or the Aria or most of those other strip properties, even if there's only 3 people in the building, they feel busy because of all the visual bling. And they also feel busy because of the number of people passing by on the strip who will go in there. So this didn't feel as busy. It was a more spacious place and I liked it. And I also loved the decorative theme, right? Like the only colors anywhere in the place, kind of, sort of, are blue and white. And the blue and white motif really, really worked, right? Like it's got a more coherent set of decorations. It's got big, grand, soaring spaces. So my first impression was that it was beautiful. And you asked me about check-in. So a lot of hotels in Vegas now have moved to the kiosk system, and I hate that with the burning passion of 1,000 suns. They don't do that. At Fountain Blue Las Vegas, you're going to check in with a human agent. I prefer that. They had lots and lots of them. They probably had a dozen check-in agents for the 6 people who were checking in at the time. So check-in was super smooth. I didn't score a free upgrade or anything, but I didn't ask for one. She did ask me, would I rather be on a high floor or a low floor? I told her a high floor. She accommodated that super simply. She asked if I wanted 1 bed or 2. So they clearly weren't at full occupancy then. So my initial impressions were that it lacked, in a good way, it lacked the busyness of a lot of strip hotels. It was just gorgeous. And check-in was spot on.
So let me ask you this, because I get your preference for an agent. And I'm ambivalent. Like I like dealing with the human interaction, and I like the fact that sometimes if you sweet talk the clerk, or you know, there's the ye old $20 trick where you sandwich a 20 between your ID and your credit card and hope you get an upgrade. Sometimes if you're just nice, you might get an upgrade. And even if I don't get an upgrade, I like talking to people. I mean, we host a podcast. We clearly like the sound of our own voice. But sometimes when the lines are bad, I do like to jump to the kiosk. So I hear you saying that it's in person. Is in person the only option? Do they have any kiosks or?
No, I did not see a single kiosk anywhere in that check-in lobby.
So in the event that they were super crowded, for those who don't like to wait in line, you know, you might want to time your arrival for when they're likely to be a little less busy.
So sure. And you are absolutely correct there. I will say though, two things. One, they seem pretty dedicated to having plenty of people around to handle that. So, you know, we'll move as quickly as it can. Also, the way the check-in desks are set up, they are spread out. So it visually, it doesn't feel like a long line, right? Even if there was one there, it's I'm trying to come up with a good analogy for this, right? But it was, there were desks spread along several walls in kind of an oval room, which is part of what I was talking about earlier. It doesn't feel busy, right? The space is laid out well.
As opposed to, and you and I both love the Bellagio, and that's a beautiful space. And their check-in lobby has the stained glass in the ceiling, which is one of my favorite architectural features in Vegas. But, you know, for anybody that's ever checked into Bellagio, you know that if you're checking in where it's anywhere close to busy, that line, even though they move pretty quick, that line feels like it's forever.
Yeah, no, that line, right? That line sucks.
Yeah. So that sounds better. So before we, we've covered that. So let's talk about the room. So let's, what class of room did you stay in? What were your thoughts on the room? And we can go ahead and cover price of the room and all that while we're there.
So, the room itself was beautiful. The closest room to it would be a room at the Bellagio, but it was whatever their basic room was. I don't remember what they called it, but it was whatever their basic room was. The price was actually pretty good, right? I think I paid $180-something and whatever it was. So the price didn't particularly stand out to me.
Was there a resort fee and all that with it? Or
There was. I try real hard to not think about what those resort fees are, but I'm sure the resort fee was probably about $45 on top of that. But no, the room was beautiful, and I guess my favorite feature of the room was it was a super comfortable bed. That was the last night of my trip, and I was kind of tired of losing money at gambling, so I just went up to my room, watched my favorite TV show, which was on then, and I just kind of fell asleep in that phenomenal bed. That may be one of the more comfortable beds I've ever slept in, and they provide a lot of amenities in the room, right? Like, you get the bathrobe, you get the slippers, and this is in even the very basic room, right? Like, the bathroom was pretty separate tower and shower and tub. They do have a separate room where the toilet is, which is great if you're staying with somebody else. So no, the room was absolutely fantastic. It may be the nicest base level hotel room that I've stayed in Vegas.
Okay, and that's good to know. By the way, listeners, we should point out when he's talking about pricing, it sounds like you were probably, with the resort fees and taxes all in, somewhere in the $230 a night range. So listeners, you ought to know that, yeah, it was a Wednesday, but it was the Wednesday of spring break. Also the day before the opening of the NCAA tournament, right?
So it was the day before the opening of the women's tournament. The men's tournament hadn't started.
That's correct. So it is a week that is not super peak, but it, you know, in Vegas, doesn't sound like at Fountain Blue, but in Vegas with spring break, a little more average than your packed in town than your average Wednesday. So rates were not at their lowest.
No, it was a premium room and it was marked at a premium price, but I felt like the price I paid for the room was fair value for what I actually received.
Well, now you say that, and that's one of the things about Vegas that, you know, when we talk about a premium room at a premium price in Vegas, I've had the experience of paying almost that much for, say, a DoubleTree Inn in Austin. So, you know, $225, $250 a night sounds expensive by Vegas standards, but you can spend that much in some 3-star hotels. Absolutely. In other markets. So it's still, you know, so we don't have this on the run sheet, but since you brought up the room amenities, what about other amenity properties? So I know you didn't buy a pass, and we'll get to that in a minute when we get to your overall thoughts. But, you know, did you get to see anything in the pool area, the spa area? Did, you know, the gym, any of those things, or did you just not kind of skip that?
So the pool area was closed. I was going to walk to it, but it was closed off. Like, you couldn't even walk in. It wasn't at a place that was accessible to me. And we'll talk about the spa in a second, but ultimately I wasn't able to walk in there. I did walk into approximately 300 million different bars and restaurants while I was there, right? I went and got a cocktail essentially everywhere I could. And every space I saw was super thoughtfully designed, and it was just really pretty. And I love how they carry the blue and white color motif off through the whole place.
Well, you brought up bars and restaurants, so let's go ahead and dive into your dining and cocktail experiences. What were the stand? And I know you didn't get to try every venue. Of the venues you got to try, what were the standouts?
So I love the center bar right in the middle of the casino floor. I think they call it the Blue Bar. It was great. They had every kind of high-end liquor that you can imagine. And weirdly, for a place that charges a premium for lots and lots of things, and we're going to get to that in a minute, the bar prices were fine. I mean, most of your standard cocktails were $18 or $20, and I get it that that's an expensive cocktail, but it's really not for the Las Vegas Strip, right? It's actually may have been $2, $3, $4 cheaper than a lot of places on the Vegas Strip for extremely well-made cocktails from friendly bartenders. So the Blue Bar was great. I went into the bar at Poppy Steakhouse before dinner, and I had an appetizer and a drink. It was great. My favorite food and beverage spot, though, was Mother Wolf. It is an Italian place where you can absolutely reasonably eat dinner there and even have a cocktail or two, and after a reasonable tip, probably still get out for a two-digit number. So it's not that it's a cheap dinner, but you're not at home in Omaha, Nebraska either. Mother Wolf gave me the single best plate of pasta I think I've ever had.
Wow.
No, like that, I had a pasta arrabbiata, so it was a super simple thing, right? But it was fresh, it was flavorful, it had the right spice level to it. And I love the fact that I was seated at a bar and was looking into the kitchen to watch everything being made. Yeah, like, I highly recommend Mother Wolf. It was a delightful place, regardless of what kind of trip you're there for, right? If you're there with your romantic other, it would absolutely be appropriate. I could see taking a business meeting or deal there, or even see, you know, going there with a group of guys. If you don't want a cheap dinner, but you also don't want one that's super, super expensive like Le Cirque or something, Mother Wolf was phenomenal.
Well, it sounds like you enjoyed that aspect of the trip. So you talked about Center Bar being in the middle of the casino. Let's talk about the gaming experience at Fountain Blue. Variety of games. I know you're more of a table game player. I'm a video poker player. But what did you think about the game selection and the way the odds are set up?
So I like the game selection just fine. And I actually won a little bit of money on slots. Not a lot, but something like $75 or $100, right? So what I'm about to say is not a knock against, you know, winning or losing money in the casino, but the table odds suck. So on a Wednesday at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, so as slow as this casino is ever going to get, you can't find a blackjack table paying 3-2 odds for less than $50. And that was just absolutely insane to me. Now, there was good news. I eventually sat down at a 6-5 blackjack table at a lower limit, and they actually asked, you know, what kind of whiskey you wanted when the attendant comes by to offer drinks. So, like, it wasn't just whiskey from the bar gun, right? Of some random mystery nature. Right. And you couldn't get super high-end things for the amounts of money I was paying.
But if you wanted Maker's Mark.
Yeah, no, okay. I may have actually gotten Maker's Mark. If it wasn't Maker's Mark, it was something, a comparable thing, and there were 2 or 3 or 4 choices.
Right.
So the service was really good. The drinks were great. But the odds are just really terrible unless you're gambling with more money than I felt comfortable gambling. Now, if you're, you know, willing to gamble $50 or $100 a hand, the odds get pretty good. But that was $50 or $100 a hand at 2 or 3 in the afternoon on a Wednesday. So my guess is if you're there on a Saturday evening, it's going to cost a ton of money.
You start talking about those $100 minimums instead of $50 minimums. Like, we've seen some pretty high stakes. Yeah.
That is absolutely what I would expect. But no, the table games had all the variety I would expect. They had all my favorite slot machines. The slot machines tended to be fairly high limit. But again, none of that really surprised me. Just the table odds were not friendly.
By the way, and this just popped into my little ADHD brain. So before we get to the last question, I've already told you what the last question is going to be. I did have a question about the rideshare location. And we'll get into this more when we talk about some of the other places you and I each stayed on this trip. There are some properties that make it pretty clear that taxi pickup is convenient. But if you want to get to the rideshare, they march you through the bowels of the property to some nondescript location where you may get stabbed. And that's kind of pushing you in the arms of the taxi providers. I'm a pretty big guy, so come at me, bro. But I would imagine, you know, some of these rideshare spots and some properties, I would imagine if you're talking about a pair of 23-year-old ladies on a girls' trip, you might not want to stand in the dank recesses of a parking garage with no security nearby. How was rideshare handled at Fountain Blue?
So rideshare was further away from the lobby and everything else than the cab stand was. The cab stand would absolutely be more convenient, and they had lots of cabs waiting. However, it was well lit, it was safe, it was clean, and it wasn't that far away, and it was also perfectly well marked. Like this, one of the advantages of being a more recent hotel is the Fountain Blue was built with rideshare in mind. So no, it wasn't as convenient as taxis, but it was also way more convenient than rideshare pretty much anywhere else on the strip.
Yeah, and I will say, and maybe that'll be an episode down the road where we talk about ground transportation in Vegas. Some of the other resorts we'll talk about in a future episode. Where I stayed, the rideshare situation was kind of a mess. All right, last question, and I'm going to give you all the time you need to answer it. With everything said, and this is a compound question, would you recommend the Fountain Blue? And if so, who is Fountain Blue for? What kind of trips is it for? And if people are going to stay there, what do they need to know?
So I would absolutely go back. I would go back with my wife. This is a great trip to go if you're with a romantic partner. Also, wouldn't be a bad place to go if you've got a business meeting or something like that. It is not a trip for a group, you know, like a group trip with the guys, right? Like that is not this place. And one of the reasons for that is it is too far away from everything, right? Like there aren't a whole lot of hotels within walking distance, and the ones that are, like the Sahara, the sidewalks aren't set up for it, right? Like you've got weird traffic cones and construction and stuff like that. So I would go again. I would go with my wife, right? Like this isn't a trip that you and I are taking together. Like you and I might very well go in there because we want to eat dinner or something like that, but we're not going to stay there. My central problem with this place, other than how far it is from everything, is just that it was expensive. Like they knew how nice they were. So the room price I actually didn't have a problem with. But for example, at whenever it was, 2 or 3 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, I went into the spa to try to buy a day pass, and they wanted $180 just for a day pass to the spa, and that is obscene.
And that doesn't cover any of their spa services. You like, it would be one thing if it was $180, but they'll throw in a 15-minute massage or...
Yeah, no, that was just for access to the facilities, and I really wanted to check the facilities out, but I was out. I asked what the least expensive treatment was, and that was $220, which was, again, in the middle of the afternoon on a Wednesday. So that was high. The blackjack odds were terrible. The steakhouses were super expensive. Like, most of the steaks were at least $95 or $100. There were a couple that were cheaper than that, but not really much. And I guess the biggest sign to me of how badly overpriced everything is at the Fountain Blue, I bought one slice of pizza from Miami Slice. And to be clear, this was an excellent piece of pizza. It was a slice of pepperoni pizza. And for one slice of pizza before tax and tip, I paid $15.50. Now, I messed up a little. The slice of pizza itself was $9, which is high, but not that high for the Vegas Strip for a piece of pepperoni. Like, that's a thing you'll see. And then the dude asked me, do you want... I can't even remember the word he used, but it was a kind of cheese. You want whatever cheese on it. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. And I thought he was offering me extra cheese. It was some soft, mushy cheese that they put on top of it, which was fine. They drizzled a little honey on it. But that was a $6.50 upcharge, and I felt like they should have told me that. That resulted in one piece of pizza being $15.50. So I guess, to me, the thing to know about Fountain Blue, other than the fact that it's lovely and the service was great, they know how nice they are, and they're going to charge for it, which means I'm not taking you there because I'm not trying to impress you. If my wife wants to go, then cool. But yeah, it's... If I'm going to pay the kind of money they charge for all the ancillary services, I'm going to do something like stay at the Bellagio or maybe the Aria or whatever where I'm closer to other properties.
Yeah, I get that. I'm a big Pizza in Vegas fan. That's the $15 slice of pizza really gets to me, and I get too on. I understand too, like steakhouses in Vegas aren't always cheap. Although next episode we're going to talk about what you and I both felt like was a real value steakhouse with excellent food. So that's a little teaser for next week. But just thinking about it, the cheapest steak is $98. Off the strip, the 3-course tasting menu at Partage is $110.
Yeah, $110 at Partage would have been a way better deal because, again, right, that was the price just for the steak.
Right. You don't have any sides or anything. And I like, once you get into Michelin star quality French tasting menus versus a steak. I love a good steak, but let's be honest, a steak is a steak. Yeah, those kind of prices really drive me nuts. Well, yeah. We're going to transition into news, but we're going to stay with Fountain Blue for our first news story. So Vital Vegas and a few other sources out there have been reporting that we covered that Wynn sued Fountain Blue because there's been some poaching of staff back and forth between the two properties, and they've been a little bit catty with each other. We remember that when Justin Timberlake performed New Year's at Fountain Blue, he actually stayed at the Wynn, and Wynn jumped all over social media with that. Well, Fountain Blue is now countersuing Wynn. So the drama between those two luxury resorts is still going on. Maybe they got to charge $180 for that spa to cover the lawyer fees. I don't know.
You know, I would have, if I was him, I would have taken the $50 or $75 I would have actually paid them. Then the $180 I wouldn't. But sure, they got some bills going. I don't understand how it can be illegal to hire somebody else's person. Like, if the person had a non-compete clause, that might be a problem for them. But yeah, I don't know. We settled this in 1865. You can't make somebody work somewhere. They can leave whenever they want to leave. I don't get how the two hotels are suing one another.
Yeah. And I don't understand labor law in the state of Nevada anyway, so I'm going to let that be. But I do think it's interesting that feud goes on. Next story, and this kind of gets into some baller, I would imagine, on a budget. Vital Vegas reported that the Rio has reopened their wine cellar tasting room, which used to be kind of a premium thing at Rio that Caesars had let close. And it seems pretty clear that with all the other things happening there, the new ownership at Rio seems pretty committed to bringing that back to its former glory. I'll add on to this that right now, there are some bundles on Southwest Vacations. And folks, we don't have enough listeners to get advertising, so I'm not saying this because Southwest Vacations paid us to. Although if anybody at Southwest wants to throw us some perks, we can be bought cheap. I mean, just drink coupons will probably do it, to be honest.
I'm going to need two drink coupons.
Yeah, at least. But right now, like, they've got some bundles on Southwest Vacations where Rio is very, very affordable. And that even includes, like, the cheapest ones are for the rooms they haven't upgraded yet. But they've got some great deals on the upgraded rooms. And I know that caught my wife's ear. I'm not much of a wine drinker. My wife is. We're hoping to get away for two or three nights to get away from the kids and go to Vegas this summer if we can con either of our parents into watching our kiddos. So grandparents out there, if you're listening, hey, how you doing? Yeah, I got to say, I am increasingly impressed, and I really want to check the Rio out now.
No, I'm... So I only went to the Rio once. It was about 15 years ago. It was not a great experience, but that's the sort of thing I would do. And while I don't know that the group of guys you and I usually goes to Vegas with would go to the wine cellar, you know, like if I was there with my buddy Ryan or something, yeah, we would absolutely go drink wine for a while. I know that's a thing I would do with my wife. So no, that's actually a spot I want to go check out.
Well, I think too, like with the, you know, it is, and your critique of the Rio has always been, it's so far from everything. You're not doing multiple properties, but if you're doing a trip where you're only in town for two nights anyway, or you're doing the bill shuffle where you try to stay at two or three resorts at a three night trip, you know, I could definitely see that being there. And again, I for me, I don't want to go there on a guy's trip. But given that my wife enjoys wine, she doesn't necessarily want to walk all over creation. There's a wide variety of food. The pool is supposed to be nice. The gambling odds are supposed to be good. Yeah, it's catching my attention.
No, that is catching my attention. But you know what else is catching my attention is I'm a little scared to go to sleep at the Venetian now.
Yeah, and you said that your trip to the Rio was not such a great experience. Well, 2 weeks ago, I think actually literally the night we recorded our last episode, and this has been all over, like all the news outlets have had this one, so I'm not going to give anybody credit because everybody reported it. There was a guest at the Venetian who was sleeping snugly in his bed at the Venetian, which by the way is a wonderful property and I love the place. And as he sleep, unbeknownst to him, he had an unexpected visitor in his bed. A scorpion stung him in his testicles.
Oh, that begs so many questions for me, and I just can't get to those questions because of the ouch factor of all of that.
Yeah.
But like, how do you not notice that there is a scorpion in the bed, like underneath the bed sheets? Like, how is that a thing that housekeeping misses? Also, how do you make things right for that guest? Like, hey, sorry about the privates, buddy. Well, here's 10% off your next trip.
In my previous experience, that if there is an injury to your testicles in Vegas, your wife gets a free buffet. But that may not apply in this particular situation. That's a story for another episode.
But, I am all down about telling stories about times you've gone to the buffets in Vegas, John. Yeah, should we tell stories now?
No.
Okay.
There's one of them we are never telling, ever.
Okay. I mean, because... Right. Okay, yes, anyway, because I'm a good friend.
So we've got a couple of stories from Eater Las Vegas. And by the way, I'm excited about these stories, not because of the content of their stories. And I have blanked on the woman's name for years, Eater Las Vegas. So Eater's a online website. They have sub-websites for every major metropolitan market in America. And for years in Las Vegas, the Vegas Eater Reporter... She broke so many stories about what was going on in the food scene, and she retired, I want to say, somewhere during the pandemic. And since then, Eater has been a series of listicles, 10 places to get barbecue in Summerlin or whatever. And granted, I still go to that website because I like to look at pretty pictures and maps of things I could go eat when I'm in town. But the journalism at Eater just hasn't been there for a while now. Well, they've got some new staff, and I would say that if you are serious about keeping up with food in Vegas because you like to travel there and you're mostly there for the food like we are, Eater is now a great place to go to. So the next two stories both come from Eater Las Vegas, and welcome back from the dead, Eater. We're happy to see you. Number one, the Red Rocker, former Van Halen frontman Sammy Hagar, the guy that can't drive 55, he's told us so. He's going to be doing the musical residency of the Palms this summer. But more than that, they're taking over the pool, making the pool area at the Palms Sammy's Island. They're going to redo the cabanas. They're going to redo the bar. And Sammy Hagar has partnerships with several different liquor distributors. So they're going to have Sammy's Island rum. He had a stake in Cabo Wabo Tequila. But apparently he's on to a new tequila project with Guy Fieri of Food Network. Fame, that tequila is going to be served there. He's got some branded canned cocktails and some beers. The Red Rocker, I think it's a lager or ale. I can't remember which one, but the Red Rocker beer. So, hey, you're an aging Gen Xer. Are you interested in partying with Sammy Hagar at the pool?
Oddly, kind of, yeah, right? Because rum and tequila drinks are what I want to drink on a pool day. And usually they're mixed with so many things that, you know, it doesn't matter if it's great rum or tequila. I don't know. That sounds kind of like a cool theme. I would do that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, usually like, you know, celebrity endorsed alcohols can kind of be hit and miss. I bought, I'm a sucker at Christmas time for the boxed gift set. So I bought Tremonti Tequila, which is Dwayne the Rock Johnson's tequila. And it's fine as a mixer. But I think this whole vibe, you know, I could see if my wife and I do get to go, if we're three nights in Vegas, that we might split a stay with one or two nights at the Rio and then the balance of the trip at the Palms, just to get off strip and try some new things. I'm kind of into this, and I would definitely, if I can be in town when he's playing, yeah, I'll throw some money to go see Sammy Hagar play. I'm totally down for that.
Cool. Well, what else did Eater have?
So Eater, they had a lot of new stories. I only pulled two. Speaking of pools this summer, Bellagio has now opened a new poolside eatery called Como Poolside Cafe and Bar. Bellagio's pool space is just breathtakingly beautiful. It's a very calm, serene, chill pool. It's not a party pool, which, you know, if you're our age, let's face it, we are too fat and old to be at the day club. Anyway, nobody wants to see us.
I look gorgeous at the day club.
Yeah, nobody wants...
Vegas deserves this.
Nobody wants to see us dancing to house music in a pool. I don't know that they wanted that when we were young. Neither of us have a modeling career. But at this stage in the game, yeah. We belong at chill pools. We shouldn't be at party pools. So if you're a Bellagio fan and or even if you're staying somewhere else, but you want to buy into the Bellagio pool, sounds like they're going to have some new dining options for you at one of the most tranquil, beautiful pool spots in town.
Well, that sounds cool. So speaking of that, can I talk about a place which is a party pool for a second?
Yes, you may.
So I was at the Flamingo less than 2 weeks ago. Their pool was kind of sort of halfway open for when it was cold in early March. But the Flamingo is very much a party pool. And what quite a few outlets are now reporting is that Margaritaville at the Flamingo is going to close. I don't remember seeing it open. Like, I won't swear that it wasn't, but it makes sense to me that it was closing. I didn't see it there.
I think it's kind of funny to have these two stories together because I feel like this is, you know, the Flamingo, Jimmy Buffett's venue, and God rest his soul, he passed away earlier this year. Jimmy Buffett's venue is closing. Sammy Hagar is coming on strong. And I feel like this is passing the torch from marketing towards boomers to marketing towards Generation X. And so millennials, if you're listening, you are now notified that in 15 years, it's your turn. So I'm not sure what that looks like. Although you guys do get the new
Bruno. It looks like they get off my lawn.
Well, they do get the Bruno Mars lounge. And by the way, I should have put this in here. That was another news story. Bruno Mars is apparently millions of dollars into debt because he's really bad at blackjack.
No. MGM debunked that.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, no, Bruno Mars is not in debt to them, and certainly not the whatever it was, the $50 million that's been reported. But no, MGM quite explicitly denied that story.
Well, thank you for correcting me. So, yeah, the boomers are out in Vegas. Gen X get Sammy Hagar. Millennials, you guys get Bruno Mars. And I guess Gen X, y'all got Marshmallow and Tape Face. So everybody's happy. Everybody gets a little something in Vegas, except for the boomers. Although you guys still have El Cortez, which, let's face it, it's a cool place to hang out. But it looks like if the Golden Girls ran a casino, let's be real. So there's something for every generation in Vegas. And thank you for being a friend. All right, last news story before we get out of here. And I'm excited about this one because I grew up watching a lot of TV chefs. And back in my day, I'm an old man now, TV chefs lived on PBS. That's where they were. Well, Rick Bayless, who's one of my favorite TV chefs, even though his brother Skip Bayless is the biggest jerk in sports broadcasting in the history of sports broadcasting. If you're listening, Skip, meh. But Rick Bayless is as cool as the other side of the pillow. He had a place in Vegas in the MGM Grand called Diego. I never got to eat there. If I ever get to Chicago, I am definitely eating at La Frontera. It's on my bucket list of restaurants. Well, now he's bringing a torta shop called Tortazo to Caesar's Palace. They did not give us an opening date yet, but I wouldn't think a torta shop would be that difficult to open. Bill, what do you think? You want to grab a torta while you're in Vegas?
So ultimately, yes, because at some point it'll be late at night and I'm drunk. But my sober, rational brain says no, because I lived in Mexico City for a couple of years, and I just can't imagine a celebrity chef restaurant in Vegas doing a torta justice.
I do think it depends, like, you know, speaking as a white person who loves Mexican food, I'm always very skeptical when the person championing a particular Mexican dish happens to have my complexion and cultural background. But I will say that, like, having watched Rick Bayless for a lot of years and a lot of his traveling through Mexico, I think if there's any celebrity chef, like, I don't want to eat Jado de la Rendis's Mexican torta. I don't think that's going to work out well. I don't even think I want Guy Fieri's, because I don't hate on Guy, and I've eaten at some of his venues at sea. I haven't done them on land, but I don't want donkey sauce on my Milanese torta. If any celebrity chef is going to pull this off, I would think that he would be one of them. And just because I've been watching the guy on TV for so long, I think I'm down with that. Bill, fine. You got any other stories?
No, I will just say I need to be drunk before I try it the first time.
I will say this. We talked about this on the last episode, that since the pandemic, there's a shortage of late night eats. I do agree with you. My one wish for this, I hope they have extended hours. Because I do agree that if you need to soak up some bad decisions before you stagger to your room and go to bed, I would think a torta would be an excellent option. So I hope Caesars does the right thing and makes this a late night eats venue. I also hope they do breakfast, because a good scrappy Mexican breakfast in Vegas, and I get it, it's going to be on the Strip, so we're going to pay way more than you should, because tortas ought to be affordable street food, and you're going to pay a bougie price because of where it is. But I'm down for that if they do it right.
I'll give it a shot.
All right. With that said, we're going to cut this episode short. We are so glad you listened. If you enjoyed it, we hope you share it with friends. But before we sign out, we just took trips to Vegas. That means content is already dropping online beyond just this podcast. Bill, where can they find us?
You can find us on YouTube at Dine Drink Travel. You can also find our sister channel, you can find us on YouTube at Dine Drink Vegas. You can find our sister channel, Dine Drink Travel, and our handle on all social media platforms is at Dine Drink Travel.
And you can find me on X, Twitter, whatever it is, at Dine Drink John. I would love to have a chat with you. And until the next episode, where we're going to dive into a steakhouse, where we're going to talk about beef cooked by a man who used to handle the pig skin. That's what's coming for you. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Happy travels.